Okay, so I will put the slideshow first. Show slides. So we have still have the chapter 18 to go, some more, and we left off from here. So we had this differential amplifier states that we were dealing with, and what was given in the previous graph or picture for it, we had these two common source amplifiers with the source resistance, and which was made of made the differential amplifier. And there the kind of the problem or the limiting factor was that the common mode rejection ratio, which is kind of the a figure for goodness of this differential amplifier, the CMRR, is dependent on this RS, which was placed like now in the within this dashed area. We have now put a constant current source, and in the simplest case, we would just have one resistor here. But now, if we make we replace that single resistor with this type of constant current source, this is just one type of current source that we could use. This RS here is just for which makes or determines the current. So this IS current is determined by this, of course, the transistor, but this RS determines that this JFET. You remember how that JFET works. So now, if we put it in this kind of configuration, then the current through this system is constant. And independent on the voltage across. So that means that, as usually, if we remember that a current source, if we take an ideal current source, for example, the internal resistance, so the internal resistance of a current source is, in ideal case, is infinite. So that means that and then in real case, a constant current source, if we have, then it has effectively a very high resistance. If you think that we have a constant current and it's independent on the voltage, and resistance is determined by the Ohm's law says that the voltage divided by the current, or the change in voltage divided by change in current, is the resistor. So if the we change the voltage, let's say we changed one volt of voltage across this system, and there is only a few nanoamp change in the current, or few microamps even, then effectively the resistance of this system is very high. So we are talking about mega ohms, or if it's in nanoamp range, it's giga ohms. So that means that effectively the rest of the circuit sees this current source as a high resistor, and effectively that means that this CMRR value gets a very high value. So we are improving the performance of this differential amplifier by using this constant current source. So we could put a current mirror, which is usually also or many times the case for example, inside a operational amplifier, we have these differential amplifiers, and we have a current mirror here, which makes the current constant current source. Which again, effectively, it looks like a thing that has a high resistance. So that's that is why this is included here. Okay, then and some other applications for field effect transistor. One thing that I already mentioned earlier, that it could be used as a voltage control resistance. So when we are in the ohmic region of this operation, then this can be done. So for example, here is just a very simple attenuator. So in some cases we would like to reduce in a controlled manner, reduce the voltage from some level to another. And then if we have a voltage controlled resistor for that, then we have the control over it. So now if this voltage, it just requires that this voltage is V out voltage is, so meaning that the drain to source voltage of the transistor is in the ohmic region, so relatively low voltages, then this thing works. So now we can, with the gate voltage, we can then modify this output voltage in a controlled manner. So if we have some input that is changing within a certain limits, then the output is changing in those same limits. But now we have the ratio between input and output, which is less than one, depending on this resistor R. So in some applications, that is good to have. And it's very simple to make. Then one thing that MOSFETs are, by the numbers, mostly used is an analog, it would be a digital switch, so maybe not in numbers, the most common use case. But the common use case is a switch, just a simple switch that on off. So that's how the digital things work. And so we have two states, 0 and 1, off and on and off. But then, of course, in analog electronics also, it's good to have. So we don't have to have a mechanical switch that we put a circuit on or off, but we can use a transistor to do that. So with the field effect transistor, it's easy to make, just because we can control the channel with the voltage. So whether it's high resistance, so we put the channel off and there's practically no current flowing through, and then we can inverse the channel so that we have it there, an NMOS device, we have an N channel forming, and then we have kind of a low resistance, and then the signal can pass through the transistor. And here is basically two ways of doing it. So we have a series switch where we have so input and output is just controlled by this JFET in this case. And so now we can in normal case, so if there is no control on the gate, we have input and output connected, but then we can deplete the channel and close it, and then we don't have any connection between input and output. In a shunt switch, we have a connection through some resistor from between input and output, and then with this transistor we can connect the output to the ground, or so then basically we put the output always to zero, and regardless of the input. So then what happens here is that if we shunt the output to the ground, then there's current flowing from the input through the resistor to the ground as well. But because of the resistor, there is a voltage drop between input and output, so that the output is at zero or very close to zero. Of course, there will be always some. So the resistance in that case of this transistor is not exactly zero, but it's much smaller than what it would be if the channel is closed. So this is how to use a transistor as a switch in the simplest case. Then coming to the kind of the most in numbers, if we count all the transistors that have been made in the world, this is the kind of the most popular use case, a logical switch. So we have these two stages that I mentioned, logical one, logical zero, that are used in the digital electronics. So we are talking about binary systems. So these simple circuits of MOSFETs can be used for this. So basically, on the left side here, we have very similar what we had in the kind of the similar picture what we had for this controlled resistor. However, now in this case we are going like on off, so we have two stages. So the control is down, then the output, there's no current through the transistor, so it means that the output is up at VDD. So the VDD level is the kind of the high level of this logic that we have, and then the zero or close to zero is our low state. So we are not kind of we always kind of go to the saturation region and then and off and kind of jumping back and forth. So we are not using it in anywhere in the middle. So it's clear difference between those two. So the left hand is kind of the illustrative case, but however, in the integrated circuits, as I mentioned earlier briefly, that the resistors are something that are not always preferable to manufacture. So you would like to reduce the number of resistors as just plain resistors, because they are not, I'm not sure if I can say that they are not easy to make on an integrated circuit, but in the process that would be an extra step that if you can avoid that, then of course you will make the process much faster and easier and so on. So in integrated circuits, this switch here, or it's actually inverter. So if the input is high, the output is low, and vice versa. Input is low, output is high. So this is a simple inverter. And having these inverters in different configurations, we can then do logic calculations. But in IC circuits or integrated circuits, we would replace this RD with the transistor, which is now in this kind of configuration, which acts as a resistor again. So it's effectively, it's not a linear resistor, but it's for this purpose, it has a kind of the characteristics of a resistor. So again, input is low, the output is high. So this we have this, the lower transistor is in off state, so there's no current flowing through it. Then the output is at high at VDD voltage. And when we have the input at high, the gate to source of the lower transistor is at high, so we open the channel, so there's low resistance in the channel, and then the output becomes close to 0 volt. So we are in the low state. So that's kind of the basic principle how this logic works. So now looking at how these different options work and what does it mean? So if we now take the most simple one with one transistor and one resistor, so you could build this, you could take a discrete transistor and make it in a breadboard and take a resistor and plug voltages, and you could make this thing. Of course, in IC circuits, that's not how it's been done, but you could make this kind of logic yourself easily. So what you see from here is that depending on the characteristics of this transistor, so we have these few factors or parameters for transistors. There's this K factor, which determines how well the channel opens and how much current there, what is the ID versus VGS function. So if we have different transistors with different K factors, then the kind of the transfer function changes like this. So if just an example that we have a logic that is plus minus from 0 to 5 volts, so VDD is at 5 volts. So from the input is 0, between 0 and 1.5 volt or so, so below the threshold voltage of this transistor, then the output here is at 5 volts. Because there's no current flowing through this transistor, then there's no voltage drop in this RD. But then we have the threshold. When we reach the threshold and go above that, then with low K value, the current increases not so rapidly. It increases, but it kind of takes a little bit more voltage in order to reach low levels at the output. At some point, it kind of reaches, so if we go to 5 volts, then we will have 5 volt in the VGS. So the resistor or the resistance of the channel is very low. And then we have a certain output. It's not exactly 0, but we are close to that. So you can see here that the kind of the ratio between RD and this channel resistance. So it's a factor of 10 to 1. Or 1 to 10, roughly here. And of course, it goes on and on, so it kind of saturates to a certain point. Then if the K factor increases, then the current, the ID dependence on the VGS gets stronger, then we have more rapid change as a function of input voltage. So we have more steeper transition from high to low, which of course is something that you would like to have when you do logic, that when you change from state to another, that there is not the change is as fast as possible. But the point is that you still have some voltage left here at the low states, meaning that you still have some. So what is the problem in this, considering when you do a computation where you have millions or trillions of these transistors, then the problem is the current. So in this case, if we think that what is the current for this particular inverter here, then of course, when we are at the input low, output high, then there's no current flowing through this resistor or transistor and the resistor here. So then that's okay. So that's not a big problem. No current, no power. But then if we put it in another state, so we put input high, output low, then the current jumps to a certain level. In this illustration, we have 50 milliamps, but that just depends on what is the RD and the transistor and so on. So it depends on many things, but anyway, it goes to high current mode. And of course, then you start dissipating power. So if you have millions of these transistors, and even if you would have microamps or hundreds of nanoamps, this current you dissipate a lot of power, which you would like to avoid. So that's why this RD, like a resistor discrete implementation, is not desired thing to do. So if we would make a logic switch in integrated manner, which is now that we have this another transistor in the place of RD, then now we have the transition. Now the transistors are different from the previous, so that's why these threshold voltages and the levels are somewhat different. But anyhow, we have high level, which is now set to 2.5 volts, and about at half a volt, or between half a volt or 0.4 volts and 0.7 volt, we transition to low state at the output when the input is going up. So now the transition is fast, so, and it doesn't affect the transistor, these K values and whatever, they don't affect that much on this transition. So temperature doesn't affect that much, because the temperature will affect the K factor and so on. So we don't have that much of shift due to different characteristics of the transistors. So that is an improvement also. And the other improvement is that the currents in these transistors are much, much lower. We still have, in both cases, we have now, even for the high, we have like picoamp range, but it doesn't go up too much. So even the high current state is fairly low. So we are talking about picoamps. But of course, if we have trillions of these type of logic gates, this still may pose a problem for the power dissipation. So, but it's already vast improvement from the previous where we have this plain resistor. So how it's been implemented in a better way is the CMOS technology that I mentioned earlier. So in CMOS circuit, we have both P and N channel devices. So MOSFETs that have P channel, and then MOSFETs that have N channel doping. So we have now two switches basically, that when the other one is on, the other one is off, and vice versa. So now, looking at this graph here, that we have these two transistors, P on top, N at the bottom. And then now if you consider the input signal. So if the input signal is high, so high voltage at the input, then the VGS for T2 is high, so we have low resistance here in the channel of T2. So that means that the V out is going close to zero, and the high voltage for T1, because the logic for PMOS transistor is the opposite than for the NMOS. So high voltage here, so it means that we have VDD and at the source, and then close to VDD at the gate. So we basically close the channel for this. So there is no channel open for this. Then if we put the input at low voltage, then we close the channel for T2. So we don't have any current flowing through. And then because if we go to, let's say, close to 0 volt for VI, then we have VGS is zero, negative, because source for this T1 is at positive 5 volts, and the gate for T1 would be close to zero. So we would have negative VGS, which means for PMOS, it means that we open the channel and basically close the switch. So the terminology can be a little bit confusing. If we close the switch, this is a closed switch. So it opens, and this is the open switch. And then open channel means that we have a channel open that current can flow through it. So it can be a little bit confusing. But if you get the idea what means, so when we have a channel is open, that means that that current can flow through a channel in a transistor, and it would correspond to a switch situation where the switch is closed. So bear with me with this terminology, but that means that now if this situation on the right mean is the situation where we have the input is at high voltage, so the output is at low, and then we would put input low, then this T2 switch would open and T1 would close, and we would be at VDD at the output, or close to VDD. So how this is better than the previous ones? So if you look at the transfer characteristics of this, so first of all, the transition is very, very fast. So it happens that when these transistors are made in a controlled manner, so that they have more or less the same type of threshold voltage and other characteristics when they are manufactured, then the transition from high to low is very fast. So when you go to 2.4 volts or so, you are still at high, but then when you are 2.55, you are at low. So there is a clear distinction between high and low states of this logic gate. So that is, of course, something that is good, that you would like to have. Moreover, the current consumption is something that if you are clearly at low state at the input, practically you don't have any current flowing. So there is always some current, but it's so negligible that you don't have to worry about from the power consumption point of view. Only when you transition from state to another, you have this current spike. This is probably an exaggeration for a logic gate. This was just a simple simulation that I made where you have this high current. But when you do this transition fast, so you don't spend too much time in this region, then over time you don't spend much energy. And then again, when you are at high level, you don't have any current flowing through this resistor chain or transistor chain, and the power consumption is effectively zero. So this is the kind of the advantage why to use this type of CMOS logic, that you get rid of the power consumption, like the constant. When if you're not doing computing, so you are in a static case or static state for this logic, you practically don't spend any energy or dissipate power. But only when you kind of switch back and forth, then of course you have these current spikes every time you change the logic or change the state, and that makes the circuit hot, and you dissipate power. That what happens when you consider a processor. If you don't do much of anything, so you just have it as an idle, it's relatively cool. But then you do some heavy computing, then the temperature starts rising. That's because you have this logic. So you do the computation. That means that you do this binary computation, calculations, floating point calculation, that this logic gate starts to flip back and forth. And in every flip, you have this current spike that has some temperature associated in the long run. And that makes the power consumption. So that's how it works. Okay, then some other circuit examples. So the long tail pair amplifier that was given in the previous, we could use this as a buffer for operational amplifiers. So this is one way of doing it. We would improve the performance of the operational amplifier if we would make this kind of configuration. So again, we would have a differential amplifier. So the non-inverting input for this amplifier would be taken from the other branch of this differential amplifier, and then the inverting one would be taken from the other one, and then the output of this system would then depend on these RDs and then the current source and so on. So it's just a fancy way of doing. Usually this is already kind of built in a circuit, so you don't necessarily need to make it externally for yourself. Then an integrator with the reset. So you remember from the past an integrator for an op amp. How did it work? So a resistor at the input, and then we have in the feedback loop, we have a capacitor. And effectively the output here is the integral of the input. So if we have some, of course it's in a, it was, one over it was minus RC times the input voltage or something of those lines, and but the problem is with this that if you never basically the output will start integrating when we have a finite input voltage. So we have finite current flowing through here, which basically, because there's, you remember the ideal op amp, that there's no current flowing into this inverting nor the non-inverting inputs, then that current that would flow from the input through here, then it would start charging this capacitor, and because this output will kind of compensate, because it tries to keep the V minus and V plus at the balance. So that means that if we very rarely, and it's relatively difficult to keep the VI at zero if you don't make any other adjustments to this circuit. So that means that if you don't have anything, we just have a noise and maybe some offset from like systematic error, then this capacitor will charge, and the output will kind of wander one way or another. It might go down or it might go up, and reach the maximum limit of this what is the at the output. So that is limited by the operating supply voltages of the operational amplifier. So of course you would like to avoid that kind of situation. And so it might be that you are checking some, you would like to integrate some signal, but you are not doing it all the time. because you will end up having too high voltages at the output, so you would reach the limit, or too low, so depending on which way you are going. So that means that you would like to reset this circuit every now and then. So that's why it's good to have this kind of switch. So in schematics, that would be a simple mechanical switch that you push. Okay, let's reset this integrator every once in a while. But if you would like to make it automatic and make it integrated to that system, then you may put a transistor which acts as a switch. So it short circuits the capacitor so that it discharges the capacitor every once in a while, so that you kind of reset the output to zero with that. So that is something that is useful to have. So you can make you would have some clock cycle for the reset. So every 10 milliseconds you will reset the whole thing, and meanwhile you will integrate, and then again you reset, and then you start again. So that's a useful feature to have. Then another is a sample and hold gate. We will look into this more when we talk about the acquisition, sample acquisitions and digital acquisition stuff. But so sample and hold gate is something that is usually needed as well when we are measuring analog or any signal, basically. But if we would like to make measurements on an analog voltage signal or current signal, whatever, then there is you would need to take sort of samples from that signal. So you cannot make the conversion from analog to digital continuously. So you need to break it in time so that you take a sample, then you process it, and then you store it, and then you take another sample, process it, and store it. So you cannot do it continuously. Of course, nowadays this is so fast that from the human perspective, it seems like continuous, but if you zoom in time, there is still these fractions of time that you take and sample and hold. And for this kind of sample and hold gate is an essential thing that is in these data acquisition systems. So in simplest case, how it can be considered is a switch and a capacitor. So we close the switch, so we let the input voltage flow and go to the output. So in that case, we charge the capacitor, so that information, so that voltage is stored in the capacitors. Then we open the switch. So now we separate the input from the output, and then we can take this output to the next stage and process it and make the analog to digital conversion and store the data in our computer or memory, whatever. And then we can take another sample by closing the switch, let the input voltage go to the output, and do it again. So some problems with this simple fixture is that when we close the switch, depending on what is the voltage and the charge in the capacitor, when we close the switch, of course, it is basically a rapid transition. So it's high frequency transition what happens. And of course, at high frequencies, the capacitor, the impedance of the capacitor is low. So it means that this the output, there's a lot of current flowing or can flow from the input to the capacitor. And the problem is that depending on where this input is coming from, so if that has high output resistance, then the voltage of the, so there could be a high, so if we essentially have some resistor here at the output of the of a sensor or whatever, then this RC time constant can be high. So meaning that if we close the switch and open it too quickly, the voltage from the input is not fully kind of stored in these capacitors, and when we get wrong value for it. So that's why this simple picture has some limitations. So how to get rid of that is that we make this thing first, in the first stage, we make a buffer with this kind of unity gain operational amplifier, which has high input resistance or impedance for the input signal. So wherever this input signal is coming from, the sensor, whatever, it sees high resistance from there. But still, and the output resistance of this op amp is low. So when we close the switch here, that voltage from the output of the first operational amplifier goes here very quickly. And then we open the switch, then that is read with this other buffer again quickly to the output. So we reduce the effect of the output impedance of the sensor or whatever the previous states, and also the next stage, that wherever this V out is going, then it doesn't affect this sample and hold. So we kind of isolate this switch and the capacitor. So this holding part here. And of course, now the question is that, okay, how to make this switch? And there, of course, the simplest case is to make put this kind of a transistor there, as was already illustrated in the past. So now we have a simple, relatively simple sample and hold gate that we can use to take samples from the signal that we are interested in, and then process it in the next stage. And of course, this sample and hold clock cycle here needs to be synchronized with the next stage, so that there's the next stage, whatever that is, will tell that when the previous sample has been processed and the next stage is ready to take the next sample, and then it will take the next sample and then process it again. So there might be similar switches at the output, later in states in the output. So that's how it goes. And even we could have some switches at the input to make, or there could be a multiplexer that this there could be several different inputs that is connected to this like one by one, and you take samples from many different input channels consecutively, so that you go first channel, take a sample, process it, put it in the memory, then connect another one, and use a simple one of these only, and you would have several different inputs still. But we will talk about that when we go to the acquisition part of the lectures. Okay, now we are at the end of this chapter 18, and it was about field effect transistors. So field effect transistors are widely used in both an analog and digital circuits. And as I mentioned many times, number-wise, if you count all the field effect transistors ever manufacturers, 99.9% of all of them, or even more, is in digital circuits, because practically all the memories, all the processors, everything is based on CMOS technology more or less nowadays. So they are made out of these metal oxide semiconductor field effect transistors. the input resistance in these FETs is high because the gate is insulated, practically insulated from the rest of the device. They can be made in a relatively small physical size. If you consider nowadays that the technological node of a modern state of the art CMOS technology, we are talking about, I think, in a commercial foundries, they make 7 nanometer line widths. That means that the transistor, the smallest feature in a transistor is around 7 nanometers. It's not that the transistor itself is 7 nanometer by 7 nanometer, but the channel widths and so on, they are and lengths, they are in the order of 7 nanometers. Of course, you have all the metallization and those things that kind of, and the transistor might take somewhat more space on this physically, but the feature size is in the order of 7 nanometers. So they are really tiny. And we were dealing with two basic FETs, so MOSFET and JFET, and mostly we were discussing about MOSFETs. The operating principle of JFET and MOSFET is very similar. So we have a channel, either it's open in to start with, and then we can close it. Or in the case of MOSFETs, we can even enhance it. So if we have a depletion enhancement MOSFET, there is already a channel open if we don't have any bias on the gate. But then we can close it or we can make it even larger so there's more current flowing through. Then the other MOSFET type is the enhancement type, where we at 0 volts at the VGS, so at the gate, there's no channel. So no connection between drain and source. And then we can open it after certain threshold voltage, there's a channel formed and there's current flowing through the transistor. Anyhow, all in all, these transistors are voltage controlled. So gate voltage controls the current from drain to source. So that's the basic principle. So voltage controlled current is what is all about. So the characteristics of these different field effect transistors are very similar, but the bias voltages may differ. So what is the proper operational point that is somewhat different between a JFET and a DE MOSFET and an enhancement mode MOSFET. So they don't operate exactly at the same voltages. And these FETs, they can be used in various range of amplifier configuration. We had this small signal model. We will talk more about small signal model in the next chapter when we go to bipolar transistors, but that's one thing to already take note. But mostly these FETs are used in logic circuits. As said, they are mostly used in digital circuits. So we have this two states. So the transistor is on or off. And because they can be made in small sizes and they are effectively the control signals. So the gate signals are insulated. So we have reduced the current from the gate is reduced so that we don't have any power issues from the gate side. And also when we're using the CMOS technology, then also the drain to source currents can be mitigated and reduced so that the power consumption is at this minimum. So we can get efficient computing by using these field effect transistors. So that was FETs. So it's really important to learn how they work and the basic principles and the kind of the IV characteristics to kind of get the feeling. It's very fairly simple. You have this second order polynomial, basically what kind of governs the current voltage dependence. And then you have the ohmic region and then saturation region, which is basically the operating region for most of the amplifiers. So the next one, we go to bipolar junction transistors. So about semiconductors, we started off from diodes. So a simple PN junction. So P-type semiconductor, N-type semiconductor put together, and we have this one-way valve for charge transport. Then we made two of them back to back, so that in a normal case they don't conduct. But then we put the gate on top of them, the insulated gate, and we can form a continuous majority carrier channel. So in N-type device, there would be N-channel forming with a certain voltages, and we can control the current through the device. And that was voltage controlled. But now we have in the bipolar junction, we are now dealing with bipolar junctions only. So we have PN junctions, and we will start dealing with those and see how that can be used as a transistor. Okay, here's an outline, an overview of bipolar transistor, the operation, simple amplifiers, and transistor characteristics, then amplifier circuits, different types, and applications where to use them, and some circuit examples. So as the same way as the MOSFET or field effect transistors, they are one of the main building blocks in electronic circuits. They can use both in analog and digital circuits. However, they are not that widely used in digital circuits, and that's because the power consumption is not that easily controlled as in MOSFETs, because we don't have this insulated insulation from the control part. So what they basically have two PN junctions, and so we call them bipolar junction transistors, BJTs, or just bipolar transistors for short. Again, we have a similar situation. So this is a control device that we have. So the field effect transistors, as the name implies, so field effect, there was the electric field that controlled the current flow. In bipolar transistors, that it's electric current that controls. So it's a current controlled device. So current into one terminal determines the current between two other terminals. So we have three terminal device, and we can use it the same way as we have used the FETs in the previous chapter. So we have a control device, three terminal device, input signal coming in, and we just put the bipolar junction transistor here. Here's an illustration of, we will go look into simple. So it looks somewhat similar that the field effect transistor, but now you have this a little bit tilted angles for this output side, but it looks quite similar, but make no confusion. So learn what's the difference in the symbols. So it's a three terminal device, as I mentioned. Now the terminology is somewhat different from the previous. So in bipolar transistors, we have collector, we have base and emitter. And again, the terminology comes from that emitter, so it emits something. And what it emits these maturity carriers. So if it's an N-type emitter, it will emit electrons. And collector is a collector of those maturity carriers. So if it's an N-type collector, then it will collect electrons. So electrons in an NPN transistor, which would be, then, because base is always then the other type. So if you have an NPN transistor, then we have N collector, P base, and N emitter. So then the current flow typically is so that we have positive current is flowing from collector to emitter, and electrons are flowing the other way around, which is by definition. And then if we would have PNP transistor, then the collector would collect holes and emitter would emit holes, and then the current would flow, positive current would flow from emitter to collector. So that's kind of the basic principle of how this thing works. But we will go into the details for it. And this is just to illustrate the voltages of this. So now we have, and we will mostly discuss an NPN transistor. So N collector, P base, and N emitter. So that's the N, kind of an N-type device. So this is a typical way of illustrating. So from base to emitter, we have VBE voltage. And from collector to emitter, we have simply VCE. So that's the typical notation, how to label the voltages. And the currents are so that we have collector current that now is illustrated from in this circuit, so that it flows through the resistor that is put here, and it flows through the collector, and then it goes through the transistor, and it goes to the emitter as well. But however, we have in the emitter, we don't have only the collector current that flows through here, but we have also current flowing from the base into the device, and it kind of combines that in the emitter. So emitter current is base current plus the collector current. But we will look into that as well in a minute. So the basic principle, so the first order approximation of these devices is that the collector current is linearly proportional to the base current. So if we have a certain current flowing to the base, there is a certain factor depending on the transistor that it multiplies that current in the collector. So it usually it's in the order of 100, 200 or so. So if you have 1 milliamp or let's say 100 microamp on the base, we have 10 milliamps on the collector. If it's 100, the beta is 100. So we have a so-called current gain for these devices. Okay, so as I mentioned, we have two types of these. So we have NPN and PNP. So NPN transistor is shown on the top. So the symbol is in the middle, so which you can find normally in textbooks. Usually you don't have the circle on, so you only have the what's inside the circle. So the circle is not always shown. Same was for the MOSFETs, that you don't have the circle every time. And the structure is in schematically it looks like this, which is in the top left corner. So N channel B, it's the base B region is typically fairly thin, so that it helps the electrons to flow from emitter to collector. We will look into that as well in a minute. And if you think about even more schematically, on the right side, we have two PN junctions, so two diode junctions. One is from base to collector, and one is from base to emitter. So they are again back to back, and In a normal case, if we don't have any current flowing from the base, we don't have any current. So the both, either one of these, depending on how the VC, the voltage from collector to emitter is, then the one or the other of the diodes are reverse biased and there's no current. But the base current will kind of make that the other one forward biased in a way that allows the current to flow. And the PNP transistor is basically just the opposite. So we replace the N parts with P and P parts with N from the previous. And in the simple, you have an arrow again showing here that in NPN transistor, it's from base to emitter because that's the PN junction. So it illustrates the diode from from base to emitter. And in a PNP transistor, it's the same. It's an arrow, but now it's from emitter. It kind of points from emitter to base because the PN junction between base and emitter is that way. So that's where the arrow comes from. Okay, so as I mentioned, I will mostly discuss the NPN transistors. And here are some long, crowded text in this slide. But when using the NPN transistor, the collector is normally more positive than the emitter. So the VCE is some volts. So we have kind of possibility of flowing current, positive of current flowing from collector to emitter. So we will now consider what happens when we have positive voltage applied to the base, meaning that we have some current flowing there. So here kind of the illustration of the basic principle. We will have another slide of this which illustrates even more detail, but this is the basic principle. So we have positive VCE, then we put positive VBE, which makes this base to emitter PN junction that there is some current. So it's basically a diode that we forward bias. And that forward biasing makes this collector, so it affects the electric potential of this P region here in a such a way that it allows, because we have a thin layer, if it would be really thick a layer of this P, then this would not happen. But when it's made in a proper way, then the current, positive current that flows from P to N, from base to emitter, it kind of affects the potentials within this P region so that it allows current to flow. So it basically, in this case, it allows the majority carriers from emitter to go through this P region, even though it's reverse, kind of the diode is in basically it won't allow it, but when we kind of open it with this base current, we make a hole there, and we have this biasing from collector to emitter. Then there is a lot of electrons that want to go through that barrier, and they find a hole because we made it with this base to emitter voltage, and then there's a huge current flowing from collector to emitter. So electrons are flowing from emitter to collector. So here's another illustration of in energy diagram. So when we have electrons, so we have n-type, we have majority carriers of electrons, so the Fermi level is close to the conduction band. And in P region, we have majority carriers are holes, so the conduction band is, or the valence band is close to the Fermi energy. So we have this band bending happening. So in normal case, when we don't have any biases, we have this barrier that the electrons cannot flow through. But then when we bias the collector, higher potential than the emitters. That means in energy, we put this right-hand part lower, so that there is kind of, for electrons, there is a downhill slide, but there is still this hump over here that they cannot flow if we don't do anything with this B region. And then when we apply positive voltage for this B region, we lower this hump and the electrons can flow more freely from emitter to collector. So that's kind of the hand-waving explanation why this thing works. But effectively what we have is that we put voltage, which means that we have current in the base that allows a much higher current flowing from collector to the emitter. So this is how it looks like in this in a biased case. So when the collector is at higher voltage, then in energy, because we are looking this energy in from the electron point of view, so it's electrons want to go its potential minimum, so or energy minimum, so they it kind of skews it this way. So the emitter is at higher energy, and when we lower this base part, then there's electrons flowing from left to right. Here's just showing kind of the proportions of electrons and holes. So again, we are dealing with NPN transistors. So hopefully this makes it a little bit more clear what's going on. So we have the base current that is basically holes, because that's the majority carrier in the base. But we have also some electrons from the base flowing to the collector, because you remember that the collector is at high voltage, not well, at higher potential. So some of the electrons, which are minority, but they still exist, they go towards the collector. And the same way, we have some holes in the collector that are in the minority, but still they are there, and they go to the base. So we have this so-called ICP. So there's collector to base current, which is relatively small, but it's still one portion of the whole current flowing. Some of the holes that from the base, they go to the emitter. So, but not many of them, but some. But that and then some of the electrons that are flowing from emitter to the collector, they recombine. So these holes that are coming from the base and coming from the collector, they recombine. But that this portion is again quite small in the total number. So the majority charge transport is because of the electrons. So there's a lot of electrons flowing from emitter to collector, and that's the main portion of the total current that we have. But we have all these contributions from the recombination, hole current, and then this ICPO, which is the electrons and holes associated from the collector to the base current. So in NPN transistors, so we have this gamma factor, which was this one, is very close to one. So meaning that this current so the electron current is kind of dominating. So we have some of the hole current, but when this gamma factor is very close to one, then this goes to very close to zero. But it's still there, but we are talking about per mil or even less. So not percents necessarily. And most of the electrons that start from the emitter, as I mentioned, some of them recombine with the holes that are in the base, either in the base to start with, or they came from the collector. So this alpha factor, which makes this what is the proportion of the electrons going through this P region, is close to one, but it still has this recombination factor here. So, but we are talking about 90% up to, or even, well, probably close, usually closer to 99%. And then this thermal generation this is not only the electric field contribution, this ICPO, but also the temperature can affect the number of holes, which are in the minority. But when we increase the temperature, there's more and more holes generated and more electrons in the base because of the thermal excitation. So this ICPO is, well, all of them are dependent on temperature, but this especially. Okay, so the total current in the collector is this ICPO minus alpha IE. And the base current, just simply from the Kirchhoff current law, when we consider this picture. So we consider all the currents, so emitter current flowing in, collector current flowing in, and that should be B over here. So base current flowing in as well. Then obviously all these currents should sum up to zero. That's a simple rule of nature. So the charge cannot build up anywhere. So that's where this comes from. And the behavior can be described, as I mentioned already in the beginning, that we have this current gain, which is given either this HFE, which is the slope of this IB versus IC. So this is usually the case for the operating point that we are dealing with. It's very linear. But of course, if you go to very high currents here or very low currents over here, there is some non-linearity. So it's not linear from zero to infinity. But it's for those voltage and current ranges that we deal with, we can approximate it with the linear slope. So this HFE, which is also given as beta, we will use more often. We use this beta to note this current gain. But it's simply given as a different or the change in the collector current versus the change in the base current. So it's just a slope, simple definition of the slope. Another thing we have, again, we have similarly that what we had for the MOSFET, we have transconductance. Again, we have this GM to mark for that. And for this, it means that what is the change in the collector current as a function of change in the base to emitter voltage? Because the base to emitter voltage is basically a diode. So we have this diode behavior, plus we have this behavior that if the base current acts as a diode. So we have this basic diode equation that we can use. And then we just multiply with this factor, and then we have directly the collector current versus VPE. And then if we take a point somewhere on this exponential curve, and we take a small portion of that, we can consider that as a linear behavior. And again, when we go to this small signal model, when we are dealing with small signals, so small ripples and small variations in the VPE, hence the small variation in the IB, which then makes small variations in IC, then we can make a amplifier out of this circuit, even though it's not linear if we look at the big picture, but when we zoom in, we can use that as a linear behavior. So simple amplifiers using these NPN transistors. This basically looks something like this. Looks pretty similar what we had for MOSFETs. So we have, again, we have the capacitor just to restrict the DC voltage from the input. So we kind of limit that from the input side. It's just so that we can use this RB and RC, and then we have VCC to bias this transistor in the operating point. So with this RB, we control the voltage and then the current that flows through this base to emitter junction, meaning that we have some certain collector current to start with. And then when we have the signal coming in, AC signal, that kind of wiggles this collector or the base current voltage here, it wiggles then the collector current, and then it wiggles this output voltage, because the current that flows through the collector goes through this resistor, and then we have the voltage drop from the VCC. So we have, again, we have these two signals. We have the DC signal that makes the operating point, and then the AC signal that we are dealing with. And that's what we are amplifying with this amplifier. And this is most common amplifier that we have, this common emitter. So meaning that we have the output and the emitter both share basically the emitter is connected to the kind of to the reference. So that's where the name comes from, common emitter amplifier. So if we now break into two parts, we have the input circuit, which is from the input side. We have this VPE voltage drop here. Then the output circuit can be considered like this. We have the VCE voltage here. They share the same current at this point, but because there is no resistance considered, we can, they basically don't share any currents in that or any voltages other than that. The other configurations that we can have is so common emitter is on the left. Then we can make it also, we can connect it as common collector, so that the collector would be kind of the reference point. And then we could make it also a common base, so base would be the reference. So let's start from the common emitter, which is the most common, like most typical amplifier type. That both the common collector and common base, they have their uses, but common emitter is mostly, it's the simplest case of dealing with. Okay. So here is again the common emitter circuit. This will kind of come on and on and on again, so that you kind of get the picture. So we have the base current, collector current, and emitter current. We could draw them differently. We could draw base current in, collector current in, and emitter current out. Then of course we would have minus sign here, which would mean that the emitter current is a sum of these two, which is basically, it's true. So it's just a matter of how you start the direction. So as I discussed in the part A, it doesn't matter how you define the arrows in your circuit for the current, the positive current It's at the end, you will find out if you have a minus sign on your result. It just means that the positive current will flow in the different direction what you draw in the picture in the beginning. Same applies here. So if we are now in the active region of this transistor, so we for the collector current, we remember that this collector current was defined that it's minus alpha times the emitter current. Plus, then we have this ICPO term. And from the previous, we could insert that the emitter current is now a sum of these IB and IC. And then when we rearrange this, then we can say that IC is a function of base current. Let's get rid of that. So that there is a term alpha divided by 1 minus alpha times the IB. And then we have a term where this ICB zero divided by 1 minus alpha. And that latter term can be also referred as the ICE zero, which is usually quite small in comparison to the first term. And this we can, which we usually give, is that, okay, IC is roughly or very close to some constant factor, which is given as beta times the base current. So there's this linear behavior. So in this case, we have this beta here. In the previous picture, we have had this HFE. So they basically are the same. So HFE and beta, you can use them both. And they relate to this alpha with this equation given in the bottom part. So when alpha is close to 1, so 0.999 or something, or 0.99 even, then this factor beta is much higher than 1, which is usually the case for NPN and PNP transistors, bipolar transistors. Okay, so input characteristics. So let's first think how that works. As I mentioned, the PN junction, or the base to emitter junction, is a PN junction which acts as a diode. So here's the illustration of a diode. So we have this exponential behavior. And when we are in the kind of the forward region, so we are the bias, the VBE bias is above 7.7 volts. We have this high dependence or strong dependence in the base current versus VBE. And then the output characteristics, which is now the something new that you need to absorb. So when we are at certain IB, so we select a point from here. So we select some current value or some VBE value so that we have some base current flowing. So we select a current at some point, and then if we change the VCE, obviously we start from zero, because if we have VCE zero, we cannot have a collector current. That's just how it goes. Then it's kind of the same as what we have with MOSFETs. So at some we start first increasing, and then depending on what is the base current, we kind of it's limited to some value, which depends on the beta value or the HFE value. The terminology or the naming convention for these regions is can be a little bit confusing. So Now, the region where we are at first, when we start increasing the VC voltage, is called saturation region. So it's not ohmic, it's saturation. So that's different from, because in the MOSFET, the operating region where we would like to be was called saturation region. So this is where you need to be careful when you talk about the differences between bipolar and field effect transistors. And for bipolar transistors, this region where the collector current is mainly dependent on the base voltage is called the active region. And this is typically the region where we would like to be. And you can see here that the slopes are not fully horizontal. So there's some slope which is off from horizontal for these curves. And that represents the output resistance of this. So for most parts, we can kind of consider them as a very really high output resistance, so that this current is not changing much when we change the collector to emitter. But there is still less resistance, so that this slope is for PN bipolar transistors. This slope is more, or how would you say, the slope is higher than what in the MOSFETs they were. In MOSFET, they were more horizontal than in the bipolar. So you have to take that into account a little bit more. Okay, and here you can see also that even if you have a base current of zero, the current at the collector is not zero, but there is this ICE zero current flowing when we put more and more voltage between collector and emitter. Okay, here the transfer characteristics. Maybe I can. I will stop here and continue next week from here. Any questions about this bipolar junction transistors or the MOSFET part that we dealt with today? Okay. No questions, so I will conclude, and we will meet again on Monday then. Thank you.